the House Co-Chair of the Legislature's Budget Writing Committee, and on behalf of House members and senators who are here, we really thank you for coming out to give us some input and advice and suggestions and criticisms, I'm sure, one or two compliments, I hope, as we build a budget to provide services for the state of Oregon. I first of all want to thank Senator Margaret Carter, in whose district we are sitting tonight, and who has helped make a lot of the arrangements, as has Tony Hobson and many of the kids who participate in the self-enhancement program. They helped with the arrangements too, and we thank them for their help. We're building a budget to provide services for the people of Oregon to help them build strong and healthy lives, strong and healthy and prosperous communities. Budgets are all about the choices you make and what priorities you put. Thank you. Budgets are just about making choices in what's important to us as a community, to us as a state, and to us individually as families and as businesses. The people here on the stage with me tonight are here to listen to your suggestions about what choices we should make, what services you think are most important for us to provide funding for, and how much you're willing to invest in those services. A little bit of ground rule for tonight. We are a bit overwhelmed at the response to our invitation to give us some suggestions, and we have had over 160 people sign up to testify. We will not be able to hear from all 160 people tonight. We would like to hear from as many as possible, as we did last night in our first hearing, and we will do in other hearings around the state. We are asking people to limit their comments to 2 minutes, and we will give you a warning when your time is getting close. Representative Nathanson will help me with that effort. She will hold up a yellow card when you have 30 seconds left and a red card when your time is up. And out of respect for all the other people who want to say something tonight, I am going to have to cut people off at the 2 minutes. Also, out of respect for the people who are here tonight, I'm going to ask that you do your best to refrain from clapping, because that just chews into the time of the people who want to speak following you. We do recognize that there's a lot of enthusiasm here, and so a little bit of that will be hard to resist, but please do your best. I will call people up in the order that they've signed up, and we'll bring four people up at a time, and I'll let you know who's on deck so that we can move this as expeditiously as possible. And with that, where's my list? Oh no, I'm not going to. Thanks. I got it. I have Kurt Widmer, Norm Eater, Jerry Williams, and please accept my apologies if I mispronounce your name, and Lenore Bijan. If those four people could come up to the table here to give us their suggestions, and then I'd like to let people know who's on deck for that. I have Terry Quinteros, Patty Katz, Susan Glenn, and Sheriff Bernie Giusto. And when you speak, please first give us your name so that we have that on the record. Thank you for coming. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Kurt Widmer. Thank you for having me here tonight. I'm here because my brewery is located in North Portland, and fully one-third of our employees have North Portland as an address. I would urge this committee to not budget in an excise tax increase on beer in the state of Oregon. House Bill 2535, as proposed, would increase the excise tax 1,235%. This would be devastating to my company. It would be devastating to an industry that in Oregon for the last 24 years has created 4,300 jobs directly and 10,000 jobs indirectly. It's a very vibrant industry. We think very important to the state of Oregon. We're clean. We recycle 97% of our solid waste. We provide jobs. We're growing. And I would urge this committee to fully consider not raising our excise taxes 1,235%. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Norm Eder. I'm Executive Director of the Manufacturing 21 Coalition. I'm sorry I'm not lead off tonight. I'm here to address two issues. First, to support the Oregon Inc. recommendation for workforce. This is $2 million, which was placed in Oregon Economic Development in the Cluster Development Fund. But I'm also here to recommend some no-cost ideas. We and the manufacturing and workforce community have four suggestions for you to write into your budget bills that won't cost the state a penny. Ask all high school juniors to register in the state's IMATCH system as part of their plan and profile requirement that's coming down the pike. Ask all community college and university students also to register in the IMATCH system. Ask local workforce development boards, state agencies, and education institutions to coordinate multi-regional, private sector-led pipeline recruitment activities. And finally, allow 16 to 17-year-old youth to participate in internships and job shadows in the trades and skilled occupations. Each of these items we hope will be written into your budget bills, asking the appropriate agencies to work together to implement them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. I would like to thank the chair. My name is Jerry Sunval Williams. I am representing the Environmental Justice Action Group, North and Northeast Portland. I'd like to thank the committee for meeting today here in North Portland. And I'm here today to express my support for funding Oregon Solutions at the $1.5 million in the governor's recommended budget. EJAG has worked with Oregon Solutions on a very important project in North Portland that I want to tell you about. For information, EJAG is a membership-driven, nonprofit, community-based organization that started in September of 1996 from a group of Northeast Portland residents. In Portland, our community's air quality is threatened by a myriad of sources, including concentrated amounts of diesel emissions. Recent studies show there are elevated amounts of air pollution in Northeast Portland. Citizens came forth and have a high rate of respiratory ailments that exceed statewide and national averages. In February 2006, Governor Kulongowski designated the North Portland Diesel Reduction Emissions Project as an Oregon Solutions project. What it did was it allowed the community to have a voice and work on reducing emissions. In implementing this, we have cooperation agreements, which you all have a poster that's been set out that shows you all the different partners that got involved and made declarations of cooperation to work toward reducing diesel emissions, including the very latest, which was March 1st, 2007, the garbage haulers in our community are now moving on to a biodiesel B5 blend. So we ask you once again to support the Oregon Solutions Project, and I would also like to put in a plug for the Environmental Justice Task Force bill that also needs to go forward. With all of the talk about environmental justice across the United States, we really need to have, the state of Oregon really needs to have that task force enacted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Lenore Bion, and I'm a representative of, or I'm on the commission of Elders in Action. I am 75 years old. I live in my house on Oregon senior citizen, low-income senior citizen tax deferral. I live on Social Security of $750 a month. Tonight I would have been at St. Andrews enjoying the sort of central mass of the Easter season, and I figured that being here was far more important because the central message of that mass is rendering service to others in the community, and that's what I'm trying to do by being here tonight. The abandonment of the general fund commitment to Oregon Project Independence, which has been a kind of wonderful model, Oregon model, with a national reputation, and replacing it with interest from the Senior and Disabled Tax Deferral Fund is not a good idea and would devastate the county financially, the county human services, taking away the means for our rapidly growing senior population to live independently, depriving us of dignity and choice when that population is growing just exponentially, and relegating us to nursing home existence is not serving anybody's best interests. It does not take a rocket scientist to see the difference between the small amount that it takes to leave somebody in their home and the vast amount it takes to maintain them in nursing homes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. May we have Terry Quinteros, Patty Katz, Susan Glenn, and Sheriff Bernie Giusto on deck. Commissioner Lisa Nato. Steve Lede. District Attorney Mike Schrunk, and Judge Julie Franz.
Members of the committee, my name is Terry Quinteros. I work for a Partnership for Safety and Justice, and we are an organization that works towards a system that focuses on healing, safety, and rehabilitation. I'm also here this evening as a constituent of Representative Shields and Senator Carter. First, I want to say thank you so very much for supporting the Smart on Crime Task Force bill. We believe that this is a bill that will provide lots of really good things for Oregon. I would also like to thank the committee for the additional $1 million that has been allocated to the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund. I am also here this evening as an advocate of domestic and sexual violence survivors, and have been since 1989. And unfortunately, I do have to say that the $1 million is not going to be enough to ensure basic services throughout the state of Oregon for about 50 programs. These programs are very unique in that they are community-based, and all someone has to do is say that they need help in order for them to receive help from either escaping domestic or sexual violence. In Oregon, I'm sure you all know that approximately 18 people are killed every year through domestic violence, and 1 in 6 women in the state of Oregon is raped, and that these people need quite a few services to support their healing and rehabilitation. And so I would urge the committee to please consider raising the additional $3 million for the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is Patty Katz, and I'm the program director for Beyond Barriers, which is a program with Partnership for Safety and Justice. I'm here to ask you to increase funding for programs to reduce recidivism. The budget for the next biennium for Department of Corrections is $1.1 billion. $8.9 million has been slated for evidence-based programs. We need $8 million more. I would urge our state to spend money not on bricks and mortar. That's not our future. Our future are some of the children that we'll be hearing here tonight. I urge you to invest in books, not bars, because the children are the future of Oregon. Also, I would like to thank you for supporting Senate Bill 856, the Smart on Crime Task Force, and that's all the time I'm going to take tonight.
Thank you so much.
Good evening. My name is Susan Glenn, and I'm also here with Partners for Safety and Justice. As a formerly incarcerated woman, I have firsthand experience with the benefits of the educational programs in prison. As a student and then a teacher of the cognitive class and a GED tutor, I experienced life-changing concepts for myself and my students. People are incarcerated for dysfunctional thinking. Recidivism is reduced by providing inmates learning and practicing new thinking patterns and behaviors. Recidivism is also reduced by providing supportive housing upon release so those new thinking patterns and behaviors are established outside the gate. Many incarcerated people are overwhelmed by the details and frustrations involved during reentry. I came from an upper middle class family and I had a college education before I fell, and I was overwhelmed with the paperwork. Aren't we all at times? Imagine an individual with almost no education or mainstream work experience trying to get established. I just want to thank you for sponsoring the Smart on Crime Senate Bill 856, and I really want you to know that I appreciate you guys coming here and letting us speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, members of the committee. Welcome to Multnomah County. I'm Sheriff Bernie Giusto. First of all, I want to tell you that the term 1145 has become fairly impersonal. The governor and the sheriffs of the state worked very closely during the interim, along with the Department of Corrections, to increase 1145 funding, which at least most of us could agree has not covered costs at the local level for housing local control inmates. In Multnomah County, this cut of $5 million per year for the next 2 years means drastic cuts in both jail beds and community supervision. This partnership between the state and county and counties has been controversial over the last several bienniums at least. I'm asking tonight to give careful consideration to two things. Number one, to restore the governor's recommended number of $239 million statewide, and for Multnomah County, the additional $25 million that means to this county. Second, I'm asking you to consider adding resources to the state, if necessary, to cover these costs for these kind of programs. As an elected official, I can tell you I understand it is not easy to make the decision to ask more resources from the people of the state. But I think the case has been made in this state that public safety, public education are worth having and worth funding correctly. Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Lisa Nato, Steve Lede, District Attorney Mike Schrunk, and Judge Julie Franz, please. And I'll have on deck Tony Hobson, Diane Iverson, Krista Larson, Dunya Manu, and there are two who wanted to testify at the same time, Joseph Malone and Sadie Feibel. If you can squeeze together, that would be fine with us. Please, Commissioner Nato.
I'm going to back clean up on this panel.
Okay, whatever order.
Chair Nolan and members of the committee, my name is Steve Leidy. I'm the interim director of the Department of Community Justice for Multnomah County, where we provide both adult and juvenile services. I also want to say that I appreciate the difficult task that you have to balance all of the various needs of Oregon citizens with a finite budget. In Multnomah County, we are familiar with budget challenges and having to make difficult choices with not enough money to do everything. When it comes to public safety, Multnomah County has set our marquee indicator as the following statement: citizens want to feel safe at home, work, school, and play. What that means is that safety occurs in neighborhoods, at work sites, at schools, and in their homes. Without public safety, all of the other services that are important to our children, our seniors, and other citizens cannot be effectively delivered. On the adult side, community corrections is one of the most effective partnerships that the state and counties have. Multnomah County contributes well over $20 million per year to parole and probation services and local incarceration. We use those dollars to provide evidence-based practices that recently has produced our lowest rates of recidivism in the history of our county. What we are asking for from our state partners is full funding of the actual services that the counties are delivering, and that was supported by the State Department of Corrections and included in the governor's proposed budget. I know that the co-chair's budget has proposed half of the full cost reimbursement. However, we must have full funding which was documented in the actual cost study to sustain what we call long-term public safety. In juvenile corrections, we would also request full funding contained for the Oregon Youth Authority diversion, juvenile crime prevention basic grants, and gang dollars for Multnomah County. That helps us to provide culturally competent shelter care, substance abuse and mental health treatment, and alternatives to detention that disproportionately affect youth of color. Due to underfunding of the Oregon Youth Authority's forecast, we are serving essentially the same youth in the community as those who are incarcerated at the state training school. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
I'm Julie France, and I'm a judge in the Multnomah County Circuit Court. Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity tonight to address issues central to the efficient resolution of cases for our citizens across the state and central to public safety in all of our communities. My focus tonight is going to be on two items which will be severely impacted by the reductions recommended by the co-chair's budget against that of the governor's budget. The first is technology. The technology and computer system currently in our statewide system is outdated, should I say antiquated, inefficient, and subject to failure. And additionally, the manual processes associated with the current system are both unsustainable and inefficient. The bottom line is that inefficient systems are costly. The benefits and the ultimate cost savings of paperless environment created by an electronic filing system are numerous and clear. This new technology, which we desperately need across the state to enter the 21st century, would enable the immediate dissemination of shared information, and that is particularly important among the partners in the criminal justice system. It would enable the efficient resolution of cases. It would enable the reduction of storage costs of ever-increasing number of paper documents, and also virtually eliminate the destruction by natural disaster or human-provoked disaster of documents that were stored. Second is the need to add 13 new judges statewide to deal with the increase in both the growth and the complexity of cases in our court system. These two trends stretch judicial resources, the ability of judges to timely deal with matters important to the citizens of our state is severely hampered. Complex cases take longer, cases stack up, citizens are not served.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You flagged her.
Yes.
Good evening. My name is Mike Schrunk. I'm the district attorney, Multnomah County. I'm here to talk to you about the quality of life and the balanced system that we in Multnomah County have tried to promote. I want to thank you for what you've done for education so far, what you've done for defense services, what you've done to help the state police. Now I'm asking you to take a hard look at the judicial budget again. We need a strong, independent judiciary. We have good men and women. They need the infrastructure. They need the IT support. We need to move forward into the 21st century. I urge you to take a look at that. Department of Community Corrections, you've heard the sheriff talk about 1145. The independent judiciary needs sentencing options. With the funding that cuts that we've seen in your proposed budget, we do not have those options available. I ask you to take a good, hard look at that. And in my allotted time before the flag gets waved, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you, we've worked hard for a balanced system in the interim. We've worked with the defense, we've worked with the governors, we've worked with some of you, and we've worked with the community, and we've tried to achieve a balance. We worked with the governors and asked to get in the governor's budget, and we see that you've cut that with regard to DAs. Since 1995, the state has stepped away from funding of district attorneys. You have 36 elected district attorneys, the men and women that work for them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair,
Commissioner,
members of the committee. We so very much appreciate your coming to our community and talking about the issues that we care about. And all of you have made an effort to be here tonight, and it's very much appreciated.
I'm chair of the local public safety coordinating council, and as you've heard tonight, members of the public safety community, we work together as a team here in Multnomah County to try to solve problems together. We are also partners with you in public safety throughout the state. And counties have a in community corrections, we are holding our end up of the agreement that was made in when I was in the legislature, and that is instead of putting people into prisons at a certain level, we are working with them in the county to hold them accountable, but also to have them change their lives. And then the amount that we're showing in terms of reductions in recidivism and increased public safety is important. So we need the funding to carry out the job that we are doing together with you. For youth, we need to do more to prevent youth, and we want to restore the governor's recommended budget for the Oregon Youth Authority and also gang prevention money for Multnomah County. These are programs that are really making a difference in turning around kids' lives, and so they don't end up in the public safety system. Our alcohol and drug treatment system is really failing us. We have 400 people waiting for residential treatment in our community. This is a public safety hazard. We need to make greater investments in treatment. And right now, without the governor's recommended equalization fund, Multnomah County will lose $2 million of those funds. Mental health services is also extremely important, and we urge funding of the community investments that have been recommended by Bob Nickel. We are also champions for increased revenue. We know the choices you face are difficult, and I don't believe they can be accomplished with the amount of revenue that you have. We stand ready to support increase in the beer fee to pay for increased treatment, and also we would submit to you that if the county's lobbying efforts to achieve $60 million or so more dollars to the general fund through the rural schools package, that should be earmarked for our shared services with you in public safety, human services, and other areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Could I invite Tony Hobson, Diane Iverson, Krista Larson, Dunya Manu, and if you'd like to bring up with you your colleagues, Joseph Malone and Sadie Feibel. On deck, we have Commissioner Sam Adams, Katie Riley, Valerie Plummer, and Robert Monahan. And we've just welcomed Representative Tina Kotek to the dais with us. Please, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Tony Hobson, President and CEO of Self Enhancement, Inc. Sadie Feibel is scheduled to speak. With your permission, she'd like to yield her 2 minutes to me. I'd also like to have all of the SEI students and family that are in the audience stand up at this time. And at the completion of this section, they need to... And you all can stay standing. At the completion of this section, they actually need to go back to the center because they have parents that are waiting for them. Also, I'd like to say, Madam Chair, Co-Chair, and Committee, appreciate you all being here. Welcome to the neighborhood. We're glad that you're here and glad that we have this opportunity. Got a short story. Pay me now or pay me later. SEI is celebrating its 25th anniversary. Been around a long time, servicing children and families. We serve 2,500 kids a year. 850 of those kids we service every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we case manage those individuals. SEI recently was recognized by Ed McConnell Clark Foundation as one of the top youth programs in the entire nation, and without a doubt, in the state of Oregon, as it relates to African-American youth, SEI is the most successful youth organization that this state has ever seen. In addition to that, Ed McConnell Clark, with their help, we're in position to now expand our program an additional 40% and service 350 additional kids next year. That's the good news. The bad news is that, as successful as we are, only 3% of our budget comes from government resources. Pay me now or pay me later. With that being the case, there are many negative statistics that we could talk about. If you just looked in the paper yesterday, 1 in 4 African-American kids suspended or expelled compared to 1 in 14 white students suspended or expelled. Only 41% of black men graduate from high school in the United States. Blacks account for only 12% of the U.S. population, but 44% of all prisoners in the United States are black. and here in Oregon. It's a fact that the largest population of black men outside of Multnomah County are in Salem in the state penitentiary. The question is, does a black child need to be a criminal, be in the foster care system, or be sick to get preventative support from the state? We would certainly hope not. If you pay me now, we are asking that you consider supporting the most successful youth prevention program in the state. Presently, we are not in your budget, but we are in your solution as it relates to the condition of black people in this state. If you want kids to see the light, then we as adults need to be the light. We request that you help us provide that light for one of Oregon's neediest underserved populations. So we are here tonight to say that we're not in your budget. We believe that we need to be in your budget to continue to provide the prevention services on the front end as opposed to the many, many dollars that we are putting in the back end. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Who's next? Go ahead.
Diane Iverson, Portland, Oregon.
Diane.
Retired. I'm here today with community partners to support the governor's budget allocation of $1 million to jumpstart a statewide initiative on community schools. Comprehensive community schools is a strategy that meets the needs of students, of parents, of educators, principals, superintendents, and the community at large. What is a community school? For us in Multnomah County, it is the integration of school-age services, academics, and extended-day programming in 55 schools located in six school districts within this county. You are currently in Jefferson Sun Community School. Education works best, we know it, when the student, the family, the educators, and the community work hand-in-hand to keep kids in school. There is no better anti-poverty program than the quality education. In Multnomah County, Sun Community Schools, we strive to minimize the barriers to student success and build assets for the students and their families so that they can reach their full potential. We are a partner in student success. So why jumpstart a statewide initiative on community schools? There are many reasons, but I will focus on one since you are the Ways and Means Committee. A community school strategy is a more effective way to use existing resources. When services are coordinated, they are more effective. In Multnomah County, we have aligned $30 million of federal, state, and local dollars around common goals using community schools as the anchor to our system for school-age youth. Instead of providing isolated programs, we are providing a system of care, and it works. I'd like to introduce to you partners in this Community Schools Initiative, a nonprofit executive director, a Portland Public Schools representative, a Sun School principal, and a manager of after-school programs from Self Enhancement, Inc.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Crystal Larson. I'm executive director of Metropolitan Family Service. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for being here to listen to us. I'm also here to support the Community Schools Initiative. Community and family involvement thrive when a nonprofit organization coordinates a community school. Metropolitan Family Service coordinates 21 community schools in our area. Quality after-school programs produce measurable academic gains, improved attendance, and increased parental involvement. A good community school program lets educators focus on the job of educating while other partners can address social service and enrichment needs. I want to tell you a quick story about a typical family in one of our schools. A child I will call Peter is 8 years old. He started at a new school this year, an elementary school that has an after-school program. He struggled with academic issues and getting acquainted with his new classmates. Peter joined the after-school program where he attends homework club every day, participates in additional activities including soccer, science club, and a reading club. The coordinator in his school has connected Peter with a volunteer older adult mentor who is specially trained to help him with reading. Peter's parents have also become involved in the school for the first time, attending parent-teacher conferences and family events sponsored by the community school. The coordinator at his school learned his family needed social services, referred them to the Oregon Food Bank, as well as to an agency that could provide funds for them for energy assistance in the winter. Peter's parents also participated in a budgeting planning class. Peter's grades have improved, he's attending school regularly, and his teachers say he's made huge improvements in getting along with his classmates. He recently wrote us a thank you note, and here's what he said. Thank you for having Sun in my school. It really helped me. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you. And next. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Joseph Malone. I'm the principal at Ockley Green Middle School. We changed the name of that. Ockley Green Arts and Technology School. I appreciate the time that you allow me to address you, and I want you to really consider of taking the mandate or the recommendation that the governor has put in for the community initiative. The after-school programs that the students that serve at Ockley Green, not only Ockley Green, but all the schools that have Sun School, is not an add-on program. It's a piece of a puzzle, a successful puzzle that is connected to the school day. And also, it's things that happen, programs that the students are involved in, the tutoring process, the homework clubs, and also the activities that they're involved in, whether it's drama or whether it's music that they're involved in. And what happens in that piece, that teachers see those students have this interest in these different activities that they never would have seen before because they've never seen these kids perform in these activities. So then when they see them have these interests in these other activities, they are able to tie that into their classroom work and give them projects to do that's something that they are interested in that makes them more successful in what they're doing, because it's always important for a person or student to be involved in something that they want to do and they feel pride in what they do. So I hope that you accept the recommendation that the governor has put in his budget and maintain that $1 million in the community initiative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dunya Minu with Portland Public Schools, and I'm here sitting in for Willie Poinsett from the Office of Student, Family, and School Support. Currently, there are 55 Sun Community Schools across Multnomah County. 39 of them are located in Portland Public Schools, and they all provide an infrastructure for extending the school day and a vehicle for our families to access many needed social services. Sun Community School sites have consistently seen family involvement increase as parents come to see their neighborhood school as a welcoming place, a place where staff and partners honor and reflect their cultures, their languages, and their life experiences, a place where children discover their gifts and celebrate their successes. Sun Community School strengthens our youth through prevention during high-risk after-school hours by providing academic and social support by creating opportunities for youth to find their gift and experience successes. 16,315 children participated in before and after-school programs at Sun Community Schools across the county last year. Of those who participated regularly, at least 70% improved in benchmark scores, homework completion, classroom performance, and social and life skills in the classroom. Sun Community Schools engages our families in their education through parent organizing, family involvement events, and adult education opportunities. 3,142 adults participated in adult education last year, and 126,221 people participated in family involvement events. Together, when we work together, we can build and sustain our communities. In closing, I'd just like to say that community schools is a proven strategy for aligning educational and health and human service outcomes. Funding this proposed budget would allow more of this vital work to continue.
Thank you. I'd invite Commissioner Sam Adams, Katie Riley, Valerie Plummer, and Robert Monahan. And on deck, I have Carol Royal, Sadie Preble, I'm sorry if I'm missing that, Mary Beth Van Cleve, and Marion McDonald.
There we go.
Take it away.
All right. Co-Chair Nolan and members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, welcome to Portland on behalf of the City Council, and welcome to my neighborhood. I'm a constituent of Senator Carter and Representative Kotek. We really appreciate including Portland on your stop, one of your stops. Portland has a number of proposals before you, and we are grateful for the consideration that you are giving to each of them. I wear a number of different hats on the City Council, so at the outset, as Transportation Commissioner, I want to thank you for making light rail as part of your co-chair's budget. We appreciate that. It's my number one transit priority. But tonight I'm here on behalf of the City Council to talk to you about education funding, both for K through 12 and also for workforce development funding. Thank you for the K through 12 numbers in your co-chair's budget proposal. We understand that there is still discussion underway and work to be done, but the figure of $6.245 billion clearly demonstrates that education is one of your major priorities, and we thank you for this important step. Support for higher education is also an important legislative priority for the City of Portland. This knowledge industry, our local knowledge industry, is the largest industry in the city with more than 40,000 employees at these institutions, 38 institutions, and their combined annual payroll exceeds $1.8 billion. The governor's budget recognized the need for bold increases in operating and capital expenditures for community colleges, higher education, and workforce development programs. We urge your support for increasing the co-chair's proposal for community colleges and the Oregon University system. We're concerned about the reductions in capital construction budget proposals, 85% from the governor's proposal for OUS system and 94% reduction for community colleges proposal. In particular, we know that PSU has a couple of capital projects. Time's up.
Time's up.
Capital projects, and we would appreciate your consideration.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Katie Riley, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of children and families in Washington County. As you may know, my husband is State Representative Chuck Riley. Little disclaimer there. I have been a member of the Washington County Commission on Children and Families since 1999 and served as chair for 4 years. The state of Oregon gets extraordinary value from its 36 county children and families commissions. For example, in 2004-05, local commissions leveraged $31.3 million in non-state funds and more than 520,000 volunteer hours. Over the last several years, commission members and staff in Washington County have put in countless hours on projects that bring people together to make a difference in the lives of children and families. These local efforts have resulted in more than $10 million in new federal, state, local, and private funds for services and training in Washington County alone. The legislature channels flexible state funds through county commissions on children and families so that citizens can guide local investments to address needs identified by local communities in our comprehensive community plans. But between the 1999-01 biennium and the 2005-07 biennium, the legislatively approved budget of flexible state funds available to support the work of local commissions decreased by 51% from $30.2 million in 1999-01 to $14.4 million in 2005-07. The Washington County Commission on Children and Families is respectfully requesting that the Ways and Means Committee increase the appropriation of basic capacity funds during the 2007-09 biennium by $3 million to support the work of local commissions as proposed in the governor's recommended budget, as well as including the $1 million that the governor recommended to address the needs of runaway and homeless youth and an appropriation
Riley.
To support community schools. We thank you very much for considering this.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs and committee members. Thank you for being here and for the opportunity to testify. My name is Valerie Plummer. I am the executive director of the Oregon Micro Enterprise Network, or OMEN. We're a network of about 45 organizations around the state that work with Oregon's smallest businesses. Collectively, we serve about 5,000 entrepreneurs a year. I'm here speaking on behalf of Oregon's small business owners, the micro businesses, and the entrepreneurs that line Oregon's main streets and fuel our economy by creating the bulk of Oregon's net new jobs annually and much of the state's tax revenues. Funds from the Oregon Community and Economic Development Department support organizations that provide guidance and one-on-one assistance to targeted business owners. And those are minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, and those entrepreneurs who are in very rural areas and in very distressed neighborhoods throughout Oregon. We respectfully request on behalf of Oregon's entrepreneurs that you support House Bill 3027 and other effective investments in entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship matters. Entrepreneurship works, so please invest in entrepreneurship. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, committee members, my name is Robert Monahan. I'm the interim director of the Oregon Translational Research and Drug Development Institute, called OTRADI. And thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the Oregon Innovation Council's funding package. The Oregon Innovation Package contains initiatives that are designed to grow industries around the state, but I'm here tonight to highlight the value of the OTRADI initiative. OTRADI is a key building block for developing a homegrown biotechnology industry. This initiative will establish a high-value, high-throughput screening facility to enhance infectious disease research and drug development. Infectious disease is a niche area in which Oregon is uniquely positioned to take advantage of. Although infectious diseases are gaining increased attention due to national security and health concerns, no other state in the country is currently focused on the infectious disease drug discovery. Oregon has significant research and expertise in this area. Researchers at Oregon universities also already identified novel drug targets and compounds named the Oregon Collections that address a variety of infectious diseases such as West Nile virus, monkeypox, tuberculosis. However, these discoveries need substantial development to become commercial products. This is exactly the gap that OTRADI will fill. We encourage your support of the Oregon Inc. package and look forward to the benefits it will bring Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll invite Carol Royal, Sadie Preble, Mary Beth Van Cleve, and Marion McDonald on deck. Please have Rachel Preminger, Courtney Morse, Dan Spates, and Susan Dodd. Thank you and welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chair, Committee. I am Carol Royal. I am the founder of SkillPoints Human Services. What we do is hire former offenders for labor and training in the construction trades. We buy a house. We fix it up using former offenders, and I'm happy to say we have our first offer and acceptance today. So I'm very happy to be here.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We need to strengthen our prison programs that reduce recidivism. For example, I have been in contact with the program PEP in Texas. This is the Prison Entrepreneurship Program. We have a large percentage of men and women who come to prison as seasoned entrepreneurs. They're passionate, intelligent, and they are willing to take chances, possessing a good understanding of business concepts. What if these inmates ran successful businesses on the outside? In 2007, 411 graduates are from the PEP program in Texas. Only two have recidivated. The governor's budget for criminal justice is very important. We need to help prisons succeed when they reenter society by strengthening in-prison programs, cognitive programs. We need to offer vocational training in realistic trades for today's business market. And we need to improve access to education. I would like to give you just a figure from Columbia University. the statistic that 25 million high school dropouts between the ages of 18 and 67, that means that federal and state governments lose more than $50 million annually.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's next? Time's a wasting.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, my name is Marion McDonald, and I'm a state-certified family child care provider in Portland, Oregon. For the last 11 years, I have operated As I Grow, serving infants and toddlers ranging in ages from 6 weeks to 3 years old. I am here as a voice for Oregon's 4,400 licensed family child care providers to support House Bill 5031 to increase child care subsidies. In the years that I've been caring for young children, I have seen a lot of changes in families, more single parents, more drug-affected families, more transitions in children's lives. While the cost of living has risen steadily, subsidized child care rates in Oregon have not increased for at least 12 years. Our state now ranks 50th in the nation in its subsidy rates. I'm here to ask you to reinstate $35 million as originally proposed in our governor's budget. I've brought along a handout, too, that details the impact of 2007 budget proposals on child care. Oregon's family child care providers are tired of being paid the lowest DHS child care subsidy rates in the country. With the co-chair's recommended budget, we are currently at risk of a decrease. In rural areas of the state, a child care provider caring for a six-week-old is paid $2 an hour. AFSCME Local 132 supports the governor's recommended budget. After 12 years of such dismal wages, family child care providers deserve better. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Beth Van Cleve, and I'm a volunteer with Stand for Children. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you on behalf of the new Educator Mentor Program. Stand for Children is immensely gratified that this program enjoys broad bipartisan support and that you have included it in your budget. As a retired teacher and principal of 30 years and having taught both pre-service and early career teachers, I am fully and at times painfully aware of how hungry beginning teachers are for good, solid mentoring. I believe that an investment made early in teachers' development will have immediate payoff in the achievement of their students and long-term returns in terms of teachers' effectiveness, commitment, and staying power. I have found that the habits and dispositions that teachers acquire during their first 2 or 3 years are powerful predictors of their future as educators. This program is especially exciting because it is robust enough to offer all beginning teachers in Oregon access to high-quality, consistent mentoring. This will be an exciting first, not only for teachers, but also for their students. The new Educator Mentor Program is so important that it needs to be carefully administered and monitored. We would like to have the funding for this program transferred to Department of Education prior to state school fund distribution to school districts based on their ADM. We have two reasons for this preference. It will then be possible to allocate the mentor funds on a per new teacher basis to ensure that every teacher is funded at the same level. The State Department is in a position to support and evaluate the program to ensure that this targeted investment is realizing its potential to increase student achievement and to reduce teacher attrition. In closing, I'd just like to say that I can think of no other program that could promise such far-reaching results for so relatively few dollars. It's a good bet.
Thank you. Was Marion McDonald... Did not come. Okay, she was. Okay, great. Rachel Preminger, Courtney Morse, Dan Spates, Susan Dodd. On deck, Morgan Pope, Becky Stewart, Shelley Immel, and Gary Magnuson.
My name is Rachel Preminger, and I'm pleased to be here to speak in support of the children's literacy nonprofit SMART. It stands for Start Making a Reader Today. As a community development coordinator and a five-year volunteer for SMART, I have witnessed from all angles the profound effect that the program has on the students and the volunteers who participate. And I speak from the heart when I say that I truly hope that you'll support them as I do. SMART has been independently evaluated and has achieved national recognition as a model program for improving children's literacy. SMART provides support for children in Oregon's low-income public schools by pairing kindergarten through third grade students to read one-on-one with volunteers from the community. SMART complements class instruction and delivers three things to participating children: low-pressure reading practice, individual attention, and books. It is the books I'd like to focus on today because books are the reason SMART is seeking $800,000 in funding for the next 2 years from You Fine Folk. The vast majority of SMART's annual budget goes to sending home two new books per month with each participating student in SMART. It is absolutely essential for students to have books in the home if they are to be successful readers, and I've met many a student at SMART who never had a book to call his or her own before they had their first book take-home day with their SMART volunteer. Students only basically have until third grade to learn to read. After that, they're expected to read in order to learn, and if they can't read comfortably by the end of third grade, they're 50% more likely to drop out of school. Right now, one in three Oregon fourth graders cannot read at the basic level, and that's a really sobering statistic for Oregon's future. Still more sobering is that 85% of juvenile offenders have difficulty reading, and it costs on the order of $40,000 per year to prosecute and detain them. The good news is that 1 year of SMART costs only $300. Since 1992, SMART has served 100,000 children, given away 1.4 million books, and coordinated over 2.3 million volunteer hours. These efforts have been recognized by some limited government funding in the past, and I can only imagine what SMART can accomplish for Oregon's children with further state support. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello. For the record, my name is Courtney Morrison. I'm the student body president at Portland State University. I represent over 25,000 students, and I'm here to talk to you about the crisis that faces post-secondary education in Oregon. One of the first initiatives we had in student government was to advance academia in the fields that we wanted to study at PSU. When meeting with the deans and members of the administration, we quickly were asked the most important question, which we did not have an answer to: where would the money come from? When you added in the cost of faculty, even at the lowest pay, in addition to the programming costs in time when programs are being cut, it quickly seemed impossible. We also researched solutions to prove that society can be responsible, such as exchanging certain utilities for more energy-efficient options. We were told utilities were already too expensive, and there was a current think tank to lower costs because we were drastically out of funds for operations. In addition, our basement in Smith had a sewage leak this year. Now we are being told that Lincoln Hall will be condemned, in addition to parts of Science Building 2. Housing rates are going up all over campus as more students are working to get into college and enroll. I sit down for meetings with various administrators so that I can be informed that the health fee is rising, the matriculation fee is rising, the resources fees are going up, in addition to tuition, which will probably be raised by 11% or higher. This is coming from a state that is already currently 46th in the nation when it comes to funding for higher education. In my role as president, I've sat on several committees and have talked to many members of the administration. I notice a trend in each conversation that goes a little bit like this: here's the money we don't have, and here's the programs we have to cut. What is most important to students? These administrators have to think of creative ways to keep our operations and programs, and the hardest thing to tell students is that their issue wasn't prioritized. We are here because it is becoming critical to have a college degree. 86% of the new jobs in 2010 in Oregon will require that college degree. It's hard to tell everyday students who are busy about their classes that their hardships are only getting worse. I'm unsure of their future as well as mine. It's hard to think, more importantly, of the opportunities I would have missed if I wouldn't have made this choice. This is just the opportunity to speak with you all this session. And you have an important choice that we cannot make, that we ask of you, and that is to reinvest in post-secondary education. Thank you.
My name is Susan Dodd, and I'm the Associate Budget Director for Portland State University, and I've worked on committees with Courtney, and I fully support what she just told you. I want to say that from our perspective as administrators, it seems like the legislature is divesting in higher education. I've been to several board meetings where the legislature has asked us to come up with ways for sustainability and greenness in Oregon, and now you're telling us that you're going to cut 83% of our capital budget. That's total hypocrisy. It doesn't make any sense. You need to come down to Portland State and take a look at some of the buildings down there. Portland is one of the top 10 cities to live in the nation, yet you're proposing to divest in our capital investments here on the campus. You need to take a look at Lincoln Hall. It probably should be a historical landmark. It's a beautiful building, but when you go inside, it's falling apart. I have a student in the Oregon University system. If you had students in the Oregon University system, would you like them to be attending classes in these types of buildings? Would you like to say, go to the city council in Portland and say, this is how we're supporting the city? The other thing, too, is Oregon is in the bottom 50 of the nation in education. You just have to look in any of the national reports. The University of Oregon is rated 120 in U.S. News, along with University of Utah. To me, that's not a good statistic when I'm looking for a college for my student. Anyway, I just really like to plead you to reconsider the governor's budget and go back to the governor's budget. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Madam Chair and distinguished lawmakers, my name is Dan Spotts, a resident of the Dalles, and I thank you for this opportunity to testify. I am Director of Resource Development for Columbia Gorge Community College and Director of Economic Development for Wasco County. My role in these two capacities, educational support and economic development, speaks to the fundamental connection between these two disciplines in rural Oregon. Community colleges are the accelerator in our economic race car, if you will. We provide the family wage workforce training that supplies the industries with the skilled employees those industries need, and those industries will require approximately 663,000 workers by the year 2014. 663,000. In the case of Columbia Gorge Community College, one of Oregon's 17 community colleges, that means workforce training in areas such as rural health care, nurses, CNAs, medical assistants, and renewable energy. In 9 months' time, with the assistance of the state of Oregon and major wind energy companies, Columbia Gorge Community College created the first and so far the only training program for wind energy turbine technicians on the West Coast. That's responsiveness to industry needs. That's flexibility and speed. That's community colleges. But our capacity is limited. I mentioned wind energy. We can only supply about one quarter of the anticipated labor needs of this fast-growing green energy. We need to do more. Please don't let up the gas just as Oregon's economy approaches cruising speed. Don't be satisfied with Oregon's 46th national ranking in terms of state support for higher education. Please fully fund Oregon's community colleges, a vital part of the K-16 spectrum, at our request, $529 million for the biennium. Thank you very much again for this opportunity.
Well, let's get Morgan Pope, Becky Stewart, Shelley Immel, and Gary Magnuson up, and then on deck will be David Rahan, Connie Ashbrook, Gene Carpenter, and Margaret Puckett.
My name is Morgan Pope. I want to thank you for the opportunity to address your committee. I'm here to discuss with you the work of the Engineering and Technology Investment Council and to urge your support for funding this program to the levels in the governor's recommended budget. I'm a member of the advisory board of the Massey College of Engineering and Computer Science at Portland State University, a group of 30-plus individuals from companies all around the state. My background is 28 years with Tektronix, about 3 years consulting with the Portland Development Commission and the Oregon Economic Development Department to begin the Oregon Semiconductor Workforce Consortium, and I finished my career at Portland State University. In these some 42 years, I have hired, managed and helped train scientists, engineers, and technicians in Oregon. And I can tell you from my experience, we need more engineers in Oregon, and why not educate them in Oregon instead of getting them somewhere else? The work of the Engineering and Technology Investment Council over the past several years is the most successful of many attempts I've seen over these 40-some-odd years. The ETIC model of commitment, shared investment, accountability, and results is one which could and should be emulated in any areas which want to involve higher education and industry or higher education and the public. Companies work closely with the Oregon University System to set priorities for investment in engineering, to monitor the progress of those investments, and to share any and all metrics in those programs. This targeted investment strategy has the strong support of Oregon industry. ETIC and the Oregon University System have a proven record of success in working together. I urge you to fund the program at the level in the governor's recommended budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Becky Stewart, and I thank you for coming to Portland. I'm the president of Ask Me Local 88. Our membership is nearly 2,800. It includes employees who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concerns, Transition Projects Incorporated, and American Friends Service Committee. As county employees and employees of nonprofit agencies, we provide a wide range of services. Some of our members provide services to juveniles, including those who are in detention, students who are at risk, seniors with and people with disabilities, those with drug and alcohol problems, those who suffer with mental illness, and those who are in the correction system or transitioning back into the community. We also include health services, general government services, and library workers. I understand that the co-chair's budget includes some cuts that would be different than what is proposed in the governor's budget. These cuts would impact Multnomah County directly, both with the community corrections and the aging and disability services. These budget cuts would have an impact on our jobs. Employees would be laid off. As a result, the members that are currently providing services, the duties they perform would have to be absorbed by an ever-stretched-thin organization. How does that stretched-thin impact workers? There would be an increase in caseload. There would be less time to monitor client welfare. There would be less time to respond to concerns from family members and providers. There would be less time to address the needs which might avoid hospitalizations or nursing home placements. There would also be problems with community corrections, those who work with those who are in drug treatment, mental health, or education so that they can transition back into the community. There would be less time to help clients train so they can improve their job skills. There would be less job satisfaction and increased workload resulting in burnout, reduced morale, and the inability to meet client needs. These cuts would not make Multnomah County a better place to live. Please don't make those cuts. Thank you.
My name is Gary Magnuson. I'm also a member of Local 88, Ask Me Local 88, and the PAC chair for Council 75. I work in mental health. I work in the commitment system, and I started in 1992 when I was hired to help manage the census at Damish State Hospital. We eventually were ordered to close the state hospital, and as we did so, we were promised that our clients would have the appropriate services in the community. As I'm sure you know, community mental health services have been cut drastically. We don't have enough services. We don't have enough safe, affordable housing. We don't have enough money to pay affordable wages for our case managers and all the support systems that are required to keep our clients safe in the community. We used to have a fairly decent community mental health system, and that's we do the best we can on what little money we get. I ask you to fully fund the governor's budget. In fact, I ask you to give $109 million more than what the governor has asked so that we can fully fund the state mental health system, replace the state hospital with the two proposed state hospitals because our clients, as I'm sure you're aware, are being housed in substandard housing. They get the best treatment they can get. But ever since we've closed Damish, I hate to say it, but as bad as that was, it was better than what a lot of our clients have. You know, living under a bridge is not considered safe housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'll invite David Rahan, Connie Ashbrook, Jean Carpenter, and Margaret Puckett. And I'll have on deck, please, Teresa Hunsinger, Betty Brislowry, Nitra Vazine, and Tammy Allen, I think. Please.
Good evening. My name is Connie Ashbrook. I'm the executive director of Oregon Tradeswomen Incorporated. We educate women and girls about high-wage and high-skilled blue-collar careers in the trades. Last year, we helped 79 low-income and very low-income women get jobs in the trades. I'm here tonight to ask you to support and build on the budget of the Labor Education and Research Center of the University of Oregon, otherwise known as LERC. LERC has had a direct impact on our ability to move women out of poverty. LERC provides vital education for workers, people that would otherwise not feel comfortable learning in a university environment are well served by LERC. I am here as one of those workers. LERC classes gave me the skills and confidence I needed to start Oregon Tradeswomen and bring women out of poverty. My story is replicated all over Oregon. LERC's return on investment benefits all of Oregon. Please help LERC serve Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jeannie Carpenter. I'm testifying in favor of restoring the budget for Labor Education and Research Center at the University of Oregon. I'm a member of the Communications Workers of America, Local 7901 in Portland, and the vice chair of the Labor Education and Research Center Advisory Board. My local has been involved with LERC since the early 1980s. I'd like to share with you our experience with training on safety in the workplace. In 1990, Madeline Elder, then a technician with US West, now Quest, was interested in safety in the workplace. Working with Steve Deutsch of the LERC staff, she applied for and was given a grant to develop on-the-job safety training for workers at US West. The project was around repetitive strain injury prevention specifically. This was a project covering about 1,500 workers statewide. The program involved developing and circulating a survey that asked for detailed workplace descriptions to all of the 1,500 workers at US West. From that survey, Madeline and Steve developed specific worksite training for technicians in the field using tools, technicians in central offices using tools, workers at desks working on keyboards and answering phones, warehouse workers, etc. Our local negotiated with US West Management to conduct on-the-job training for workers in every title, every workplace, inside and outside. Then they trained member volunteers from all the titles to train their coworkers on workplace safety in their particular work site. Both CWA members and US West benefited by this training. Less lost time from work and potential surgery prevention benefited workers, their families, and US West. Without the expertise and assistance provided by LERC staff, who understand workplace issues like no other academic institution in Oregon, our local could not have done this workplace study and safety training. As a member of the LERC Advisory Board, I'm aware of the funding issues in the last biennium for higher education in general and LERC in particular. During the past 8 years, unions and other constituents have paid... Oh, okay. Please restore the funding.
Thank you. Thank you.
I got it. Thanks.
And who's up?
My name is Dave Rahan. I've been an AFSCME member since 1976. Took my first LERC class in the late 1970s. I've been an AFSCME represented employee ever since, currently serving on AFSCME staff, representing workers up at OHSU. We have worked closely with LERC over these years in things like interest-based bargaining training. In other words, bargaining a contract
coming from common interests rather than button heads. Our latest work with LURC has been in attempting to make the workplace more safe, less harassing. We've had some anti-bullying, mobbing courses up there that have started to work. Problem-solving, interest-based resolution training to help management and workers learn how to have a more productive workplace. They've also helped us out putting together our new employee orientation packet. And let me cut to the chase. I'm here to ask you to put our tax money where my mouth is. Well, I don't expect you to do it alone. I've talked to the director, Bob Bussell. I'm putting my money where my mouth is. A substantial portion of my estate is going to be going to the Labor Education and Research Center. They need to have stable funding. Please, please stabilize the funding for LURC. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, members of the committee. My name is Margaret Puckett, and I have a child with a mental illness. I am on staff for Trillium Family Services, which is Oregon's largest children's mental health provider, and my job is to support and educate other families like mine with children receiving intensive mental health treatment, as this is where my own child received services 11 years ago. I'm here to ask for increased funding of community mental health services statewide. You may have heard testimony from other families about how hard it is to get services. Well, I have a handout that will go into the record, and I've listed the services needed by two different families, one in Portland, one in Corvallis, and there are dozens and dozens of them. Each one needed multiple appointments and meetings. Each had unique forms to complete. Each required faxes and copies of other documents, such as medical and insurance records, waivers for the release of records, letters from doctors and clinicians, and so forth. Each required time off from work and then extra time to catch up from work. And what's most frustrating, each only offered a tiny piece of what we needed, and we had a very difficult child at home. And these organizations are really diverse. We have schools, police, counselors, support groups, hospitals, insurance companies, shelters, attorneys, and federal agencies. Now, if our child had another serious medical condition, such as leukemia or cancer, we would not be talking to all these people. I mention leukemia and cancer because I have another chart that shows that children's mental illnesses are 3 to 4 times the rate mortality rate of childhood leukemia and cancer, and we can't understand why we can't get the services we need. About 85% of all families are capable of taking care of their child because their child's illness is biological and genetic. It has nothing to do with abuse or neglect. But only 30% of our children are getting treatment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Before I bring the next panel up, I just want to give us all a time check. It's 7:53 by my watch. We had scheduled this hearing to run until 8:30. I'm going to extend that till 9 o'clock, but we still probably will not be able to get to everyone, and I cannot tell you how sorry I am that we won't be able to hear everyone. But I'll continue the hearing until 9 o'clock. May we have Teresa Hunsinger, Betty Brislari, Mitra Vazin, and Cami Allen with the Project Network. Thanks.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee, good evening. My name is Teresa Hunsinger, and I am Program Director for Clean Rivers at the Oregon Environmental Council. Founded in 1968, OEC is a nonprofit organization with nearly 2,000 members around the state of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I would like to draw your attention to the state's Natural Resource Agency budgets, for which adequate funding is critical to protect clean air and water and to grow a
sustainable economy. I'll highlight five particularly important programs. One is the Department of Environmental Quality's water quality programs. As our soon-to-be-released report, Cleaner Rivers for Oregon, will show, every one of Oregon's 10 largest rivers violates water quality standards. Oregonians all around the state live with polluted rivers, not just in the Willamette Basin. DEQ is responsible for protecting Oregon's water and implementing the Federal Clean Water Act, but the agency has been woefully underfunded and understaffed for several years, eroding its ability to protect public health and the environment. I urge you to fully fund DEQ's water quality budget proposals. Oregonians expect our drinking water and our rivers to be clean, which requires an investment. Next is DEQ's Clean Air Initiative. This program would restore staff positions to monitor air toxics, implement the clean car standards, enforce air quality laws, and implement a clean diesel program to retrofit older diesel engines and school buses. I'd also like to highlight funding for watershed restoration via the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. This is critical support for watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts, and I want to emphasize how important it is to provide the non-capital funding to ensure that these organizations can implement the projects that they receive capital funding for. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, good evening. My name is Mitra Bazin. As a naturalized United States citizen, I am proud to live in a democracy and have a voice in our educational system. I am the vocational programs manager at Tongue Point Job Corps Center in Astoria, Oregon. This evening, I'm here in support of Clatsop Community College. Currently, we have 42 students enrolled with Clatsop Community College. We serve at-risk and disadvantaged youth. Supporting community colleges goes beyond counties in Oregon. Our nation needs a skilled worker. In the 21st century, we need to compete in a global economy. And today, as the baby boomers are retiring, we cannot afford to delete health occupation programs or ESL programs at community colleges. I was born in Tehran, Iran, and when my family lost everything, what we came out of the country was our language skills of English and French. Education is the backbone of every nation. I have made it my patriotic duty to support education in this country, and I urge you to support community colleges in Oregon. Thank you.
I want to thank the committee for accepting me and listening to my testimony. My name is Kamaya Allen, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And I am from Project Network Treatment Center. I am currently a client there, and I am successfully completing treatment at next month on the 15th.
Congratulations. Thank you. Good.
What I'm asking is that you guys support treatment centers here in Portland, Oregon. This treatment center has saved my life. I have a child I have gained back in my custody. I went to court and I'll be gaining full custody of my child in 4 months. I'm off parole and I'm currently looking for a job. Project Network has helped me to become a woman, has helped me to become strong, has helped me to become independent, has helped me to become a strong and loving, kind mother to my child. And what I'm asking is that you please do not take from the treatment centers here in Portland that you will give. It is helping women and mothers and single women in this community to become strong women in this community. If I didn't go through this treatment center, I wouldn't be sitting here today. I'd probably be dead. And what I'm asking is for you guys' help. We need your help. And we are willing to do whatever it takes to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to come and speak to the committee. I'm Betty Brislon. I represent Elders in Action. but I need to share something with you first. I was hired in 1979 by the Health Department in Multnomah County to execute a federal grant in oral care. We were looking at training the people that were caring for the elderly in nursing homes and hopefully to find those oral cancers that so often are missed. There's 2% mortality or survival actually because of the lack of people's understanding of what they're looking at when they see abnormalities in the mouth. I worked in 22 nursing homes during that year, continued after that for a long time, going back to do staff training upgrades as their new personnel came online. I am really representing Elders in Action here with a passion. Do not defund from the general fund OPI. I went to these nursing homes in 1979. In 1975, when OPI was funded, there hadn't been by 1979 much change. But when Measure 28 and Measure 30 came up, I went out to those same nursing homes and imagine my surprise, what a difference I saw. Instead of a warehouse for people of all ages and all abilities, I saw assisted living centers in the very institutions that I visited so many years ago, and it was a result of the OPI, the changes. Currently, the average OPI expenditure is $135 a month. The nursing home care is $5,200 on the average. So it's penny wise and pound foolish, in my opinion, to take the OPI services off of the general fund, and maybe we'll have enough money in the property tax deferral to fund the services we're presently given. We currently have...
Thank you.
We have waiting lists all over the state for OPI. Thank you for hearing.
Thank you very much. I'd like to... I think we're finished, right? Thank you. I'd like to invite Marjorie Harris Shaker, Jenny Bird, Skip Houck, and Jerry Swenson. On deck, Dennis Wild, Christy Obink, Haley Smith, and John Siefley. Please begin.
All right. My name is Marjorie Harris Shakir, and thank you very much for this opportunity to advocate as well for Project Network. I'm very moved to be given this opportunity to speak for a facility that supports the recovery from substance abuse for women and their children. Let me just say that my first teacher was a woman. If it weren't for a woman, I would not be able to tie my shoes. I would not know how to speak, nor would I know how to go to the bathroom. Project Network gives women the opportunity to regain their role as mothers by helping them to address the needs of their substance abuse and also the needs of regaining living skills and how to parent and reenter society. We're asking that this committee consider in their budget a place for that type of structure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bird, and I just want to thank you guys for the opportunity to be here. Also from Project Network, a recovering addict, grateful for Project Network for me a place to be there to accept women trying to get their children back. We are just asking you guys to put us in your funding for the money to keep us going and to keep those women out there going that don't have their kids, that are trying to get their kids back. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jerry Swenson, and since I wasn't sure whether or not I would be here this evening, I sent each of you an email earlier this week asking for your support for community colleges, and especially to reinstate the monies for state funding for capital construction. I've been connected with Clatsop College for over 40 years, 29 as a mathematics instructor and 39 as a member of the Clatsop Community College Foundation Board. In my email, I described how Clatsop purchased two 50-year-old buildings in the 1950s from the Astoria School District for $1. Interestingly enough, these buildings were condemned by the State Board of Education as, quote, no longer suited for educational purposes. They were remodeled into the main buildings of our present campus. Next year, Clatsop will celebrate its 50th year as a community college, which makes these buildings nearly 100 years old. Over the years, the taxpayers of Clatsop County have paid our state taxes so other communities could build their college campuses with state-of-the-art classrooms, laboratories, handicapped access facilities, adequate parking, etc. We were willing to make sacrifices and make do with what we had or do without, but that is no longer an option. The old buildings are deteriorating, and it's not feasible to repair them and bring them up to code. As the oldest accredited community college in Oregon, Clatsop needs and deserves a new campus if it's going to meet the present and future needs of our students. There's a $22 million bond measure being voted on by Clatsop County taxpayers this May to finance construction of this new campus. We absolutely must have the state's financial support for this project. Thank you for listening to my plea.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Skip Hockey, and I am the executive director of the Astoria Warrenton Chamber of Commerce. Jerry kind of stole my thunder, but in 1957, I entered Astoria High School as a freshman. And we had to build that high school because, like Jerry said, the high school that we had up on the hill had been condemned, could no longer be used for students. Well, funny, though, that the community college went in the next year, and they've been there for 50 years. My father just passed away last year at the age of 95. My father went to high school at Clatsop Community College. It is in terrible shape. We have been cited twice, once from the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities, and have been threatened to lose our accreditation. We have also been cited by the Civil Liberties Department of the Oregon Department of Education. We can get shut down. And how can we provide the skilled labor that this state needs to build its economy if we have to try to do it out of a 100-year-old facility? We can't do it, and neither can the other college. We need to keep funding for our community colleges, and it's imperative. You have to help us. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm inviting Denny Wild, Christy Abink, Haley Smith, and John Siepley to the table. On deck, we have Jeff Lady, Michael Rosen, John Acosta, and Greg Heyman. Yeah, we did. He was here last night. I'll tell him. We've heard him.
Madam Chair.
Please.
Members of the committee, my name is John Siepley. I'm a classified employee and Local 89 SEIU officer at Portland State University. Thank you for your opportunity to speak to you in our neighborhood. I spoke to some of you when you came to PSU for your tour of our facilities and left that night with some optimism that higher ed may realize some reinvestment. Alas, that optimism changed to doubt. I request you revisit the higher ed budget and fully fund at the governor's level. Since the PSU visit, we have had additional mechanical failures that could have been avoided. As our campus continues to deteriorate and get closer to becoming slumlords, our housing could turn into tenements. Please give us the chance to make our university something to be proud of and not a future campus that resembles the state hospital. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Dennis Wild. I'm with the Gurney-Yedlin Development. We're a large regional real estate development company headquartered here in Portland. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Bioeconomic and Sustainable Technologies Consortium that's part of the Oregon Inc. proposal and the governor's budget. The Bioeconomic and Sustainable Technology Center is a critical next step in Oregon's ability to maintain leadership in clean, green, transferable technologies. This is the next great wave in terms of economic movements in the nation, and Oregon is seriously the best positioned state in the nation to take advantage of it. For our part, all of our new projects are targeted to achieve 50% reduction in energy use within 5 years, and within five years, we want all of our projects to generate more energy than they consume and consume more waste than they produce, and we've stated that publicly. But to achieve that, we need help. We have in Oregon a resource network that is one of the finest anywhere. But in order to keep the high ground, we have to invest in the future. Higher education and the best research consortium are critical to solving the greatest problems that we have in terms of energy consumption, resource depletion, and new building technologies. To achieve our five-year objective, we need the most creative minds driving new solutions. The remarkable success here in this state at OHSU with the development of a new wood adhesive based on how mussels attach to rocks underwater is a fantastic example of how we can move forward with benign technologies that are both healthy for the environment and good for our economy. We must capitalize on the expertise we have in this state. Please help us make BEST the most envied research program in the nation. Please reinstate the $3 million, which is a very small sum to commit to make this possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Wild.
My name is Christy Obank. I'm the director of Portland Schools Nutrition Services, and I'm here today to support a trio of House bills that would support Oregon farmers feeding Oregon kids in the lunchroom. This is a new concept. Oregon is one of very few states that does not financially support its child nutrition program in schools. Most other states give cash reimbursement. We're asking to do something unique and different. Don't give us cash reimbursement. Give us money that would require us to purchase Oregon-grown and Oregon-processed foods. The bill also allows for garden education, for hands-on learning, and it would help reduce some of the childhood obesity by increasing the fruits and vegetables that we can serve to kids. Most people don't realize that the valuable education dollars that you have so generously provided our districts do not make it down to the school cafeterias. Those dollars really, quite rightly, need to be left in the classroom. So school cafeterias are left on their own to generate their own dollars, either through federal reimbursement or through cash sales from kids. Because most of our funding is federal, those dollars cannot be used specifically for Oregon products. This bill would allow us to do that. So we'd really like you to consider that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Please remember that every time we applaud, we lose someone's chance to speak.
Hello, my name is Haley Smith. I'm a graduate student at Portland State University, and I'm here tonight to testify in support of House Bill 3185, which would create a school garden program in the Oregon Department of Education. School garden programs, in conjunction with farm-to-school programs, are a proven systems approach. They have been proven to increase student achievement, increase test scores, and help resolve discipline issues. School gardens also address critical issues leading to a childhood obesity by increasing students' consumption of fruits and vegetables and increasing physical activity at school. The obesity report released just this week identified school gardens as part of a viable strategy to combat obesity. School gardens promote youth development and increase students' equal literacy. And finally, school gardens further impact the community by improving public health, building capital, improving environmental quality, and supporting the local economy. We respectfully request that Ways and Means hold a hearing to address and ultimately fund this important piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. May I have Jeff Lady, Michael Rosen, John Acosta, and Greg Heyman. On deck, we've got Cara McGee, Ann Branson, Steve Phillips, and Sylvia Brummage. And Jeff, please remember that we've already heard you, and others are interested in speaking, too.
Then I will abdicate to anybody else who wants to speak.
Thank you. You're a gentleman.
Chair Schrader and Nolan, members of the committee, and especially our own Senator Betsy Johnson. My name is Greg Heyman, president of Clatsop Community College, and I want to thank all of you for taking the time to travel around this great state of ours to listen to these voices of the people that you serve. There are 17 great community college stories. I want to tell you one. Clatsop Community College serves approximately 7,000 students each and every year, providing the residents of Northwest Oregon with their only regional opportunity for higher education. 27% of each and every high school graduate in Clatsop County comes to Clatsop Community College in the following year. $92 million of annual economic activity in Clatsop County is directly attributable to Clatsop Community College being there. Our students and our community and our business neighbors depend on us and our educational services for bettering their future. At Clatsop Community College, we have been providing access to educational opportunity and success for 50 years now. And we are committed to being able to provide the same access to quality education for the next 50 years, but we need your help. We need your help in the form of support for our operational expenses. We need support for capital construction. We need support for student financial assistance, and we're glad that that is included. I have provided you with a copy of our campus replacement project information brochure, which outlines our most immediate and critical need, our plans for meeting that need, and our need for your support. The $17.5 million in Article 11G bonds that we are asking from you will be the seed money that will make it possible for us in Clatsop County to build the $60 million new campus that we need in order to meet the needs of our students today and in the future. Without your help, this will not be possible. Tonight, I have with me, and you have heard some of them already, about 20 people who've traveled from Clatsop County 100 miles to speak with you to share their personal stories of just how important Clatsop Community College is to them and to their future, and how important it is for us to be able to continue to be in that future for them. Their words are much more important than mine because they are the people that both you and I serve, and I thank you for listening to them.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is John Acosta. I'm the chair of the board of directors of Morrison Child and Family Services. I've also been a Morrison board member for 9 years. Morrison is in its 60th year of successfully providing community-based mental health and drug and alcohol treatment services to Oregon's most vulnerable children. Let me tell you first what I'd like you to do. Three things. Restore the $6.5 million funding recommended by the governor for critically needed Oregon Youth Authority Behavioral Rehabilitation Service provider rates. Second, close the 30% wage gap between our for-profit colleagues and us. Third, reimburse us for the true cost of providing these critical services. Who are these vulnerable children? They come to Morrison after being severely abused or neglected. They suffer from psychological and emotional injury. Many have turned to alcohol and drugs to cope, causing the kind of catastrophic results you'd expect. Some have tried to kill themselves. They're not even old enough to vote, and most of them have faced down adversity more than any of us in this room could even hope ever to encounter. These children were pretty lucky, believe it or not, because they got to Morrison and Moores and programs are funded in large part through budget allocations that you approve for OYA and DHS. We operate three OYA behavioral rehab services programs and one DHS behavioral rehabilitation service program. Your budget decisions this year will directly and deeply affect the ability to serve Oregon's children. Let me give you just one example to consider. A 15-year-old girl who came to Morrison after living 3 years on the street. She was 12 when she hit the street. She graduated at 18 into a job, her own apartment, and skills giving her the ability to cope and function in society. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, and thanks for the opportunity to testify. I'm Mike Rosen, and I'm the Portland Chapter Chair for Stand for Children. I'm also the father of a fourth and eighth grader, both of whom attend Portland Public Schools. On President's Day, Stand mobilized over 3,000 citizens at the state capitol to lobby for a $300 million increase in funding over the governor's proposed $6 billion budget for K-12 education. So first, I'd like to thank Representative Mary Nolan and Senator Kurt Schrader for their tremendous leadership, which has gotten us to a recommended budget that includes an additional $245 million of the $300 million we need. However, the additional $55 million is needed and will make a difference. For Portland alone, this increase could mean an additional 25 teachers or counselors for 2 years, and after 10 years of cuts, that's a big deal. We know we can't immediately build back all that's been lost, and that's why even though we are in an economic recovery, our request is modest and supported by the hard work of continually raising our taxes locally, economizing through the closure of schools and increased class sizes, and an enormous amount of school-specific fundraising just to provide a small portion of such essential programs as art, music, library, computers, and reading support. We know that more money isn't available unless you make tough choices, and we're not asking you to divert funds from other essential services, but we are asking that you raise revenues through an increase of corporate and cigarette taxes. You're on the right track, but we can do more, and we need to do more. And we're ready to continue to provide the support you need to make it happen, because I continue to ask myself, if not now, when? Thank you.
Thank you. Kara McGee, Ann Branson, Steve Phillips, and Sylvia Brummage. On deck, Maya Chamberlain, Roland Michelson, and Frank Granger. Please.
My name is Kara McGee, and I'm here on behalf of Clatsop Community College. I'm 18 years old and currently attending the college through the high school. I have been there for one term. I have a disability that I have suffered from since I was born. This disability has caused me to use a wheelchair for distances. Clatsop Community College is currently not handicapped accessible. It has some modifications, but it is not meeting the standards. Clatsop Community College is in desperate need of your money to build a new campus. The current campus I don't believe it can be renovated because of such old building, and it's just not adequate. But you guys have proposed $6 million for a total community college capital construction. The governor had proposed over $100 million for community college capital construction, and our project alone needs $17.5 million from your state. So I hope that this can give you an idea about how frustrated we are about our campus, and maybe you can have it in your heart to let us have some more money. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it helps us understand.
I try.
Hello, Madam Chairwoman, members of the board. Thank you for having me. My name is Ann Branson. I'm a senior at Seaside High School. I am speaking tonight on behalf of Clatsop Community College. At Seaside High School, we have a senior project that requires us to do a form of community service. I immediately knew I wanted to put on the Vagina Monologues by Eve Ensler, but I needed a place to do it. Luckily, my advisor Lenore Morrison is part of the Arts and Ideas program at Clatsop Community College, a program that has provided the community with theater, with music, with all sorts of art, and I was able to put it on there. This event reached almost 250 people, and because of such support, we get to do it again at Clatsop Community College. It provided us a venue where we could reach the audience we wanted, who we knew would respond well to it. Clatsop's Arts and Ideas program has done a wonderful job of providing music, dance, lectures, and all sorts of things to our community. Living in the Seaside Astoria area, we don't have much opportunity to see these sorts of things, and for Clatsop to bring it to us, it's a wonderful thing that we're not going to get unless we go to Portland. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Ms. Branson, I think you succeeded in waking us all up. Thank you.
Madam Chairwoman, and representatives and senators, and especially Senator Betsy Johnson, thank you for the opportunity to come here tonight. My name is Steve Phillips. I am the vice chair of the Seaside School Board, and I'm very proud of this young woman to take on that project and move forward. But I'm here to speak to you tonight on behalf of Clatsop Community College. As a citizen of Clatsop County and a businessman in Seaside, I am trying to do my responsible job as being a citizen of this state in volunteering in a lot of different areas. But one of the things that I find most important is the education of our young people. I have been asked to be the co-chair of the committee to see that the bond issue is passed in Clatsop Community College on behalf of our college. This will work. We will get the double majority, and we are receiving tremendous support, but all our efforts will fail if we can't get the $17.5 million of support from you. Please don't make my efforts go in vain. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Sylvia Brummage, and I'm a constituent, a mother of three, and a volunteer for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I'm here to plead for the people, for a community mental health system to give us care before crisis. You already pay for these services in more people being in the judicial system and in the jails. If you can fund this, it'll be a proactive measure instead of a reactive measure. And I know that when I plan my budget, I want to get the biggest bang for my buck. Thank you.
Thank you. Maya Chamberlain, Roland Michelson, Frank Granger, and Deb Rock. On deck, Carol Cushman, Terry Oliver, Shannon Wilhelm, and Chris Montgomery.
Madam Chair, my name is Maya Chamberlain, and
hello.
I'm Program Director for the Friendly House Senior Program. Friendly House is a district center that allocates OPI funding to frail seniors living independently in their homes. I'm here to ask you to restore the general fund's commitment to Oregon Project Independence. I'd like to give the rest of my time to Mr. Neil Twyford, a new friend and recipient of OPI.
Madam Chairman and committee members, all my life I've had cerebral palsy. I went through community colleges and state colleges, had a career in journalism. Now I'm retired, elderly, unable to function like I used to, and OPI has been a great help to me. I have a housekeeper who comes in once a week. A year ago, I had a stroke. They provided me with a walker that I needed for about a month. If I'd been in that walker, if this meeting had been a year ago, I wouldn't be able to get in here in that walker. This school is not accessible. I cannot say enough about the services OTI has given me, and I cannot believe that this is not being fully funded. The $12 million was originally there, and the $4 million recommended by the governor. Please, you know, it's been a long road to me, and I want to enjoy my last years without having a huge fight just to survive. So please fund this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to say a few words to you. And I'm Roland McGeelson. I'm the Executive Director of Columbia Community Mental Health. And since a lot of my consumers that we serve showed up tonight but will not have an opportunity to speak, I will speak for them too, and I submitted their written proposal that I hope you will read.
Yes.
I am pleased that you are funding policy proposal 10443, which basically funds the intensive outpatient treatment services that are part of the Oregon State Hospital Master Plan. But the 9+ million that you put in your budget is only 1/11 of that is recommended by the Community Services Work Group report, and I hope you will reread that and especially look at page 34 that I've submitted with my proposal. Let me give you some facts that hope will open your eyes. We know that mental illness is the leading cause of disability in the United States and even in the world, which means there is even economically make good sense to put some money in there because there is a major loss of productivity. 2/3 of all the uninsured mental health people never receive treatment. And we know treatment works, and treatment at the beginning has way better outcomes and is way cheaper. If we don't fund this at the level that is proposed in the Community Service Work Group, then the expensive Oregon State Hospital Master Plan will fail. To give you an example, in the physical world, if somebody has an infection at their toe and we wouldn't treat it and just wait until this person needs to be admitted to get an amputation of the toe, you think that would be ridiculous, but that's what we're doing.
Thank you.
I appreciate your contribution.
Thank you much.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Frank Granger. I'm here representing, as a delegate, SEIU 503. My employer is the State of Oregon Employment Department. I worked for the Employment Department for 18 years, serving primarily businesses, existing business, new business, and job seekers in northeast Portland area. It's incredibly rewarding to serve people and have them come back to you later on, businesses and job seekers, and say thank you for helping me. What I'd like to ask you tonight is to fully fund the Employment Department budget that they have requested, and also, if there's a little more money there, we're going with several positions that haven't been filled. We provide direct services to the businesses that most everyone in here goes to and the people in the neighborhoods, your neighbors possibly, in providing services. Even though we haven't got all of our positions filled, we give 100% all of the time to serve the public well. And again, I'd ask you to just give us a means to support business and promote employment as best as we can. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. My name is Deborah Rock. I am a business service representative, an SEIU 503 delegate, but I'm a business service representative out of the State of Oregon Employment Department, now under the umbrella of WorkSource Oregon. I've been with the state 26 years, 19 years on the Southern Oregon coast, helping to assist businesses and workers from the downsized timber industry. Now I have been in Portland for the last 7 years, helping to assist businesses and job seekers with downsizing. Our department has been cut $21 million. We have had to eliminate 81 positions. I think we're flying somewhere out there as a stealth bomber, and we're not on anyone's radar. We are not funded from the general fund. However, we are mandated to deliver all kinds of services under the Workforce Investment Act. We're mandated. We're also under the Department of Labor. Our veterans programs have been cut within our agency, and we are still required to deliver the same amount of service with half of the positions. We also are mandated to deliver claimant reemployment services by the federal government, and that has also been cut. We are the major link when everyone starts coming out of the training institutions, be it 12th grade graduates, community college graduates, higher ed graduates, and any of the vocational training programs. We are the link that have been investing in an iMatch Skills computer system and a huge... Thank you. I would ask that you please look at how we are funded and look for other alternatives. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carol Cushman, Terry Oliver, Shannon Wilhelm, and Chris Montgomery. On deck, we'll have Pat Bates Sherman, Melissa Wood, Lori Guerrero, and Michelle Bassard.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader, members of the committee. I am Carol Cushman, president of the League of Women Voters of Portland and a resident of North Portland. I'm representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon this evening. I commend you for bringing this committee hearing to our community to allow the public to share their thoughts and opinions with you. One of our priorities is housing for low and moderate income families. Throughout Oregon, local jurisdictions report that the cost of housing is one of a number of factors threatening family stability. Additional state financial support devoted to proven programs will help prevent the loss of existing affordable housing, develop additional units, and increase home ownership. As a member organization of the Housing Alliance, we support the $100 million agenda, including Senate Bill 38, the document recording fee. Too often, households are forced to spend more and more of their income on housing needs. This forces families to make difficult choices that can result in poor nutrition, skipping needed medication, and school failure. As a multi-issue organization, the League believes in the importance of addressing the full range of basic human needs, including affordable housing. In order to pay for this and other important state services, we strongly urge you to look at all funding sources. Please take a careful look at the many tax exemptions given to special interests. We commend you for establishing a rainy day reserve fund and hope you will follow your current path and ultimately vote to permanently eliminate the corporate as well as the personal kicker. Thank you again for this opportunity to testify in a community setting. We know that crafting a budget which seeks the common good is achievable. We ask that you consider the needs of all Oregonians as you work towards this goal.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to Portland and for giving me the opportunity to speak with you about the important budget decisions ahead. I am here today to ask you to support the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry because of the educational services they provide to teachers and children. I am Terry Oliver, and I teach in the Beaverton School District. I am always looking for ways to keep my science curriculum current and inviting. Classes at OMSI inspire my lessons, helping my students to be curious, to get involved and to discover the joy of science learning. The educational staff at OMSI teaches me creative and fun ways to impart physical, life, space, and earth science lessons. But too often the demands on time and resources leave our kids short. This is where OMSI has been so valuable. OMSI educators bring materials and activities that we cannot provide alone. They work with us to complement our curriculum with exciting demonstrations and hands-on activities that make science real, and our students respond with true enthusiasm. OMSI staff is always available for ideas and to answer questions, a resource I've come to depend on. Our children are the future of Oregon. They are the next scientists, doctors, engineers, and community leaders. We need to give the opportunity to see science and math as accessible and filled with promise. OMSI makes science come alive throughout our whole state. It provides a hands-on, exciting experience for thousands of children and adults. That interest in science is crucial to our future, our state, and our precious world. Please support OMSI and science education. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Shannon Wilhelm, and I am speaking for the Partnership of Safety and Justice. Before I begin, I would like to thank the Ways and Means Committee for allocating an additional $1 million to the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Service Fund. Unfortunately, the amount the committee allocated was not enough. The budget needs $3 million more to ensure basic services for women and children that provide safety and are community-based. With the continued support from your committee to increase funding for the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Fund, basic services throughout Oregon can be provided, and we can continue to save countless lives. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Montgomery. I'm a volunteer with Partnership for Safety and Justice, and I just want to thank you all for coming out today. I want to thank you also for considering how your Senate Bill 856, the Smart on Crime Task Force Bill. As you know, it would create a task force to look at ways to shift the state's priorities in ways that promotes public safety and reduce recidivism, and also has the potential to make recommendations that would create a future for Oregon based on healing, public safety, and rehabilitation. So far, 10 members of the Ways and Means Committee are co-sponsors of this bill, and we thank you all for that. And now I'd like to take a moment to thank the sponsoring members of the committee, which are Senators Morse, Brown, Carter, Nelson, Westland, and Winters, and Representatives Shields, Brunn, Garrard, Hanna, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Lim, and Nathanson. And once again, I just want to remind you all that you do make a difference.
Thank you. Indeed. Good. Indeed. Pat Bates Sherman, Melissa Wood, Lori Guerrero, and Michelle Bassard. And I will have one more panel after that, and that will be our last panel. Ken Cudell, Bobby Regan, Josh Volk, and Peter McDonald on deck. Please.
Girls and young women who are at risk have been underserved in Oregon for decades. Good evening, Madam and Chairman. My name is Patricia Bates Sherman, and I am here on behalf of the Coalition for Advocates for Equal Access for Girls. And we are supporting and wanting to talk about four priorities of the governor's budget. The coalition supports the budget for the Oregon Youth Authority, the addition of 145 closed custody beds, and the reopening of the Oak Clark facility, which is a gender-specific environment that supports the unique needs and helps to remove barriers for the success of young women. Girls respond better, feel better, and do better when they are supported through a gender-specific services. We also know that the co-chair for this part will possibly decrease and then eliminate some of the dollars. We also are supporting the school-based health clinics. There are 44 school-based health clinics in 17 counties now, and there'll be in 2007 there'll be 60, a total of 60 more within the 25 counties. On an average, girls represent about 59% of the clients and 64% of the visits to the health-based clinics. These clinics are also a very friendly environment for young girls. We support the tobacco tax that will help to support health-based clinics. Because remember, when there is no care, that leads to more sickness, which leads to absences of school, which leads to dropouts, which leads to crime, which leads to asking for more dollars to fix it. We also support the homeless and runaway bill that has the, we need to, we want you to reinstate the $4.6 million that are dedicated for the funding. The $1 million is just not enough.
Thank you, Ms. Bates Sherman.
Co-chairs Schrader and Nolan and committee members, thank you for your time. And I also want to address Senator Carter, Gordley, and Courtney, and your support of Senate Bill 154. My name is Lori Guerrero, and I'm a grateful recovering methamphetamine addict who has successfully had her children returned from DHS. I am your biggest bang for your buck.
Thank you.
I am now employed by Volunteers of America. I work at East County Child Welfare. I help engage other parents into treatment to keep from having their children removed. The reason I am here today, and I'm also on the State Association for Oxford Houses of Oregon, which is supported through the Oregon Recovery Homes, which is on the budget. The reason I am sitting here today with two teenage children in the Portland Public School District as a single mother being successful celebrating 5 years of recovery on Sunday is because I was fast-tracked into treatment and had a supportive home to move into in an Oxford house where I became self-supporting. I want to support the restoration of the Oregon Recovery Homes and the improved access to treatment on the policy option package 1017 on the governor's recommended budget. A key driver to it is affordable housing for your committee. Oxford Houses is affordable. Oxford Houses serving 1,200 people today, 300 children in this state. We have moved from 50 homes to over 148 homes this year in the last 10 years. We need our outreach workers to help support that. In conclusion, by supporting Oregon Recovery Homes, you get the most significant and comprehensive return on your investment by reversing the social impact of addiction, by restoration of children and families, employment and tax contribution, education, public personal health safety, dignity and respect, reducing homelessness, criminal recidivism, unemployment, insurance and public funding, welfare dependency, accident, suicide, and death.
Thank you. Yes.
Good evening, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Melissa Wood. I'm a grateful recovering addict, and 2 days ago, I celebrated 2 years clean and sober. The reason I'm here is I would like to ask you to restore the funding that the governor has recommended in the budget for treatment programs and Oregon recovery homes. Without Oxford Houses of Oregon, I would probably be dead or dying today. In 2006, we did a survey in Oregon, and the average age of a person in Oxford Houses was 35 years old. 73% are male and 27% are female. Average length of abstinence is 16 months. Average length of residency is 9.5 months. 90% have been in treatment, averaging 2.2 episodes. 64.8% have experienced homelessness, averaging 16.2 months. 75% have been incarcerated, averaging 18 and a half months. Another way of looking at it, about 35% of residents move into Oxford Houses directly from other state or federally funded institutions, many of which would otherwise be potentially homeless. 8% live with family as an often temporary and last resort, and 9.3% rent rooms in often derogatory environments to avoid homelessness. Add that to the 27% entering directly from homelessness, and you get roughly 80%. of residents in Oxford Houses at risk of homelessness upon entry. Oxford Houses are truly the last house on the block for many, and I know that they've saved my life and thousands of others. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Congratulations.
I hope we all leave here as the kindred spirits that we indeed are with the decisions that you have before you. That said, I have a secret that I'm going to share with you, well, with everybody in this room. I've been the director of the Johnson Creek Watershed Council for just over 3 years and had never seen a single salmonid in Johnson Creek other than a dead maggot-encrusted carcass, much less a ruby-red coho in full spawn throttle until last November in Crystal Springs, a tributary of Johnson Creek. It wasn't that I hadn't had opportunities, but for reasons that defy reasons, I turned down all offers. I wanted to see one in Johnson Creek, even if some thought that was a laughable rarity. I believed. I believed they existed because people told me they did, people who shared their stories with me, stories captured in the pages of the council's newsletter within your reach and received by 2,000 Johnson Creek residents who reflect a choice and a trust to preserve and persevere in the face of obstacles, not unlike the women you've heard from this evening. What, you wonder, does this have to do with my comment tonight? Everything. Conservation practices are defined by terms such as restoration, rehabilitation, enhancement, or all-inclusively as improvements. Yet none of these practices are possible without the individuals that make them happen. Please show that you value the organizations and individuals that serve on the front line of watershed restoration and ensure that we have clean water, clean air, healthy communities, and strong economies by affirming Oregon's role as an internationally recognized leader in watershed protection and collaborative conservation, and approve Senate Bill 5542 and affirm an adequate balance of Measure 66 capital and non-capital funding so that watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts together shares $12 million. There's an additional $14 million for non-capital grant programs and $61 million in capital grant funding for OWEB. By doing this, as Senator Schrader said last night, we have a prayer for the next century.
Thank you.
You guys are incredible.
And I'm sorry I didn't say this before I announced the last panel. I do want to thank everyone who came tonight. You have really given us very important things to think about and some very good insight. So thank you very much. A few of the committee members are planning to stick around for a more casual conversation with those of you who we were not able to accommodate in the formal meeting. And so you're welcome to have individual conversations, or do you want to take public testimony, Senator? Continue taking testimony. Okay, thanks. Please.
Chair Nolan,
Ken.
Members of the committee, my name is Ken Cudell. I'm retired. I'm a master gardener. Tonight I represent the Oregon State University Extension Service Advisory Network. We're here tonight to ask your support for the integrated research and extension programs of Oregon State University. These programs are the Ag Experiment Station, the OSU Forest Research Laboratory, and the OSU Extension Service. We in Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas County believe that agriculture and forestry research and outreach is important to all Oregonians. The OSU statewides have proposed a series of initiatives that will improve the lives of and businesses of Oregonians, and we hope you find this project compelling. It's contained in Senate Bill 5515, and it's a $15 million price tag. My message is simple. Please consider the full statewide request of $15 million. With me are three people who are here to give a single example of how this has affected their business or them as individuals. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. I'm Mr. Cudell. I don't think they were signed up.
Yeah. Yes.
Were those among the names I called?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Maybe one, maybe.
I had Bobby Regan, who I don't see at the table. I know Bobby's here. I had Josh Volk and Peter McDonald. Okay. Please proceed.
I am Peter McDonald, a filbert hazelnut grower from the Wilsonville area. I am here representing 650 growers statewide with an industry of $50 million farm gate value. As we try to transition from a very serious threat of eastern filbert blight to a bright future with resistant trees, we need all the help we can get in extension services and the agricultural experiment stations. Please increase the funding through OSU and its statewide public service agencies to support our state nut. Maybe it's appropriate that I'm one of the last speakers. With another hat, also a cultural one, I urge you to restore full funding to the Oregon Historical Society and to provide funds to the Oregon Public Broadcasting to allow it to reach more Oregonians in the rural area. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Josh Volk. I'm one of the farmers at Sauvy Island Organics, just outside of Portland, Oregon. And I'm basically here to ask for the same thing, full funding, the $15 million for the policy option package, which would allow extension to provide the services that help me every day as a farmer. I'll be real brief. It's my bedtime, so I need to get out of here. But there's lots of groups of farmers that I belong to, and we all look to the Extension Service to provide and the university to provide the expertise when we have questions that we can't answer on our own farm. Once again, I just want to say that I think that $15 million is well spent. Thank you.
Thank you. Bobby?
Good evening. My name is John Adelsich. I'm a member of Washington County Horse 4-H, and I've been elected to the Washington County Horse Advisory Board for 6 years. I'm speaking in support of the $15 million policy options package approved by the OUS Board of Higher Education for the three OSU statewides. 4-H as an organization has taught me and thousands of other 4-H members across the state of Oregon valuable life lessons. As a member of Oregon 4-H, I have learned the important aspects of leadership: listening, contemplation, critical thinking, conflict resolution, and how to speak for all those I represent and for what I believe in. The qualities that I and many other youth in Oregon have learned as leaders in Oregon 4-H will be a benefit to us for the rest of our lives, creating a strong foundation on which to build a successful future. Senate Bill 5515 provides the continuation of these essential programs that create valuable leaders among the youth of Oregon. Thank you for your time, and please fund the three OSU statewide program at $15 million.
Thank you. Bobby, Ms. Regan. And then I'm going to dismiss the committee for those who have a ways to go to find their way home tonight before they have 8:30 meetings in the morning. But I would also call on deck for further testimony Michael Dembro, Dr. Joy DeGruy-Leary, Denorja Price, and Marcus Mundy. Ms. Regan.
Good evening. I'm Bobby Regan, co-chair of the Portland School Board, and I'm speaking tonight on behalf of the superintendent and our school board. We recognize how difficult it is to try to carve out an adequate K-12 budget in the face of so many competing state priorities, and we commend you for the work you've done to date, including formation of the Rainy Day Fund. We encourage you to look for additional and attainable revenue sources to fund K-12 and other critical state programs. We appreciate the governor's initial K-12 budget proposal of $6.06 billion and are extremely grateful for the increased $6.245 billion in the co-chair's proposed budget. Yet we all recognize that this funding level is still not adequate. Even at $6.3 billion, we would only be at 80% of QEM funding. Last month, Portland Superintendent Vicki Phillips proposed a budget that, for the first time in a decade, does not propose sweeping cuts. I pinch myself every time I say that. The budget, however, does not restore any of the hundreds of teaching positions we were forced to cut over the past decade, nor does it allow us to reduce class sizes. Portland's proposed budget is built on a projected $6.3 billion state school fund. The impact of a $6.245 billion funding level, while very encouraging, will force us to make cuts or spend down reserves by $2.1 million next year and $2.3 million the following. As an OSBA board member, I know that OSBA's highest legislative priority, like Portland Public Schools and all Multnomah County schools, is the $6.3 billion funding level proposed by the Education Coalition. If the May budget forecast is positive, we hope you will continue to strive to get there. Thank you so much for your great work.
Thank you very much.
Great. Good night.
And I have Dr. Joy DeGruy-Leary, Denorsha Price, Michael Dembro, and Marcus Mundy. Committee members, we are adjourned, so if you would like to get headed home, you're welcome to, or hang out and have some fun with us.
I'd like to thank you for being so gracious. My name is Joy Leary, and I serve on the Executive Committee of the African American Mental Health Commission. I'm here to speak on behalf of the commission, who is in collaboration with OHSU, asking for $1 million to put together to start a collaborative effort to work with African American people, specifically to get a culturally appropriate and a culture-specific model for working with the African-American community. I believe this is often the elephant in the room. We already know about the disparities. We know that we are overrepresented in incarceration. A significant number of those people incarcerated have mental illness, are not diagnosed or wrongly diagnosed, and are essentially punished for being mentally ill. We know that we are losing money with hospitalizations. We also know that this is a community. I'm glad that you're here in this community, underserved community. We are looking at this collaboration as an opportunity actually to reduce costs. OHSU is going to help provide us with fiscal management and billing. We are also looking at existing facilities so that we don't have to create one. We've been working since 2001. This is something that has been greatly needed. $1 million is almost embarrassing to ask for, given the greatness of this problem. At the same time, we would also like to let you know that, and I like to let you know that I travel all over the country. I've been to Europe. I've been to Oxford, pretty much all over Canada. And we are talking about a premier model. What Portland is doing, is there's no likeness for it in the country. We would be cutting edge, and we would be serving a population that has been underserved for far too long. So please fund this, at least with this $1 million, to begin a six-year effort. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, co-chairs Nolan and Trader, members of the committee. My name is Michael Dembro. I teach across the street. I teach English at Portland Community College. I'm also the community college faculty advisor to the State Board of Education. And I'm urging you tonight to find a way to fund community colleges at a level much closer to the State Board's recommended level of $529 million. And the reason for that is I'm thinking of my Writing 115 class this term, and I told them I was going to speak to you on their behalf. Several of them were here earlier, but they had to leave. And this group is very typical of our classes at the college. It's a very diverse class in all sorts of ways. A third of the class is African American or African. A third is white, a third is Hispanic and Asian American. Plus, I have a dog in the class because one of the students, Tim, is legally blind, and Tigger goes where Tim goes. And in addition to that, 19-year-old mother of two, two disabled vets, one from each of the Iraq wars, one from the first one, one from the current one, one who's in the reserves. He might be called away at any time. Just a huge variety of people, and it's a wonderful class, and I love teaching this class. They have enormous potential, but they're also very vulnerable, and they need your investment in them to be successful. Half of them can potentially not make it for the reasons that they gave me. They said, I asked them, what do they need? And they said, they need more classes so they can stay on the campus and at the college. They need more full-time counselors, and they need more full-time teachers. And without that, you're just not investing in Oregon, because they are the future of Oregon. So please do what you can. Find the money and use it well, please.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair and Committee. My name is Denorja Price, and I'm the director of the Urban League's Senior Services Program. I've been in that position about 5 years, and each year I've realized that there's a threat to cut funding for senior programs. One of the very valuable programs that the state funds right now for seniors is the Oregon Project Independence. The seniors that the Urban League serves are those who do not qualify for Medicaid because they have more than $2,000 in assets. Many of them are coming out of the hospital, or they're just merely old and very frail. They don't have any natural supports, and they've either outlived all their relatives or their relatives have just abandoned them. Last year, around the same time, the Urban League staff was asked to reduce the number of clients or client services who use OPI by 100 hours per month. We did that by cutting out baths to one bath a week, or in-home services were cut back to 1 or 2 hours per week. And when you think about that, somebody coming out of the hospital, they're only going to get a bath a week because they can't get in and out of the bathtub. Oregon Project Independence is one of the programs that seems to be on the chopping block every year. The program is designed to assist seniors in their home so they can continue to be in the community as long as it's safe for them to do that with just a modicum of outside assistance. We provide, through this OPI, light housekeeping and personal care. In addition, we also link seniors to other programs. It costs $300 a month to help a senior with OPI. If they had to go into a center, a nursing home, it would be $3,000 a month. That would be $2 million. For a year if we had 60 people off of OPI. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you all who have hung in there till the end. Committee members, thank you for your attention and your interest. I'll see most of you tomorrow morning at 8:30. We're adjourned.